Up in the morning and in the field, breaking my back just to pay my bills. Love what I do till the day I'm dead. I'll be working on my old homestead.
Welcome back, folks. This is Lloyd Creech II.
Paul McDaniel.
And you're listening to Radio Hour with EKH on 104.9 FM, WSKV, out of Stanton, Kentucky. Hope everybody's having a great and wonderful weekend. Probably raining by now.
I wish it would.
Yeah, we need a little bit of rain. No, yeah. Not a lot, but a little bit.
My garden's dry already.
And but if you've looked at the daily rain percentages for this coming week, it says that we may get like 5-6 days in a row of some kind of precipitation. Now, maybe not all day rain, but it'd be spotty showers or something like that.
Well, I like those evening showers, you know, because it has a chance to soak into the garden ground.
And I hope we can get them. I normally say that we don't need rain around here, but we could use just a little bit and stuff. I was out tilling my garden. I was out using that healer better. And it is kind of dry out there and stuff, even for it. So I was like, you know, we could use a little bit, but you know what? Every time we get a little bit, we get a lot. So,
well, Lloyd, where you guys are at up around that I-64 corridor, they call it, uh-huh. You get a lot more rain. I'm just 30 miles south of you, uh-huh. And I'll be watching on the weather, and you guys are getting dumped on, and I'm mm-hmm. not getting anything. Wind blowing.
Me and Paul and stuff, we text each other every couple of days, if not every day. And he'll tell me what kind of weather he's having down here, and I'll tell him what kind of weather I'm having up here, and it's a big contrast of mm-hmm. difference and everything of what's going on and stuff. Because I'm like, well, you know, we got storms headed this way and stuff. And he goes, that's sunshiny over here.
Well, that one day I was coming to work, you know, the sun was shining all the way until I got just north of Stanton. I think I texted you and asked you what that thing was in the sky. And then once I got over the mountain there in Montgomery County, there wasn't anything in the sky.
Yeah, the sky was trying to start falling and stuff. But hopefully it don't rain like they're saying it's going to. We need a little bit of water. We don't need a lot of water.
We don't need downpours. We've been getting a lot of that the last couple of years.
They're saying that we could, every year, for the next 2 years, we get a little bit more rain. Then we could go into a dry spell. And I hope we don't ever go into a dry spell, because we've gotten used to having all this rain. But the hay fields, the fescue has headed out, the seeds mm-hmm. and everything. But problem is, it's just tall. There's no undergrowth to it and everything. So, but everybody be going into the hay fields here in the next 2, 3, 4 weeks.
Well, they're cutting over there at where I'm working on Harper Ridge right now.
Already cut?
Yeah, he's got it on the ground. He's already rolled some.
Woo-wee. Good luck for him.
So yeah, it's thick in there. I mean, it's real thick. You can't even get the one gate open. You have to, like, bulldoze
really?
It open to get
really?
It.
Really? That must be nice.
Yeah, of course he has them cows on it too, you know, and alternates them, so those fields are manured constantly. And
mm-hmm. I've noticed that since I've taken, I took 55 head of mine off back in November and the week of Thanksgiving, and I can tell you my grass has really shot up and stuff, because there's not as many cows eating mm-hmm. on it, so... and I'm going to let my farm rest for a year before I start buying back into it.
Yeah.
And stuff. I have 24 mommies, one bull, and the rest of them are calves and everything. So, so I still got several and stuff, but I'm not going to run like I normally run.
Well, right now he's got his in the back 40, but normally they're up there. I come to work by myself and have to go through two gates, and, mm-hmm. and a lot of times I'm chasing a cow and trying to close the gate at the same time.
Yeah, that's always fun stuff. We seen some people. We went to church a couple of weeks ago and stuff, and the guys talking about the gate advocacy thing that we did a couple of years ago, I think it was. And he said that was pretty funny and stuff, and I was like, yeah, you know, open the gate, you know, to everyday farmer stuff, you know, it's kind of a hassle and everything. But when you got your wife with you, you know, a coworker or something like that and stuff, most people know the passenger gets out and opens the gate.
Yeah, gate boy.
And stuff. But, you know, there's times that I pull up to a gate and stuff, and I'll look over at Jordan and stuff, and he goes, oh, yeah, I'm supposed to get out and get that gate. And I was like, yeah, don't shut your... He has a bad thing when he gets out and does the gate. He always gets on the wrong side of the gate, and then he's sitting there scratching his head trying to figure out which side of the gate he's supposed to be on. And stuff, you know, whatever. Me and Paul's just sitting here and stuff. We haven't seen each other in a while and stuff, but we text every day. But I'm 50% of the way done with my healer better that I've been talking for months about. I finally got the hitch my uncle Jimmy had. And he said, here you go, you can have this and stuff. So I dismantled it and everything, cut pieces off of it, got it down to where I could pick it up and stuff. It was sitting on a two-row tobacco setter and been sitting there for years. It had been mangled, been hit, you know, by tractors and everything. So I went and dug it out of the mud, took it apart, took it back to Camargo, just taking as much steel off of it as I could to get down to the bare bones of what I needed. And then I went to Metals USA or Leopard Steel, whatever you want to call it, over in Winchester.
Yeah.
Picked up some bar stock and had it, Donnie welded it for me. I ordered the, what's the plates called and stuff, the hard plates and stuff. They're on axles.
Moldboard
plows, whatever you want to call them. And I ordered those and all that came in. But I did not order the U-boats that came with it because they were going to be too short and for my application. So I have been 3 weeks trying to find good U-boats for these things. And with the economy the way it is and trying to get parts, everybody knows
it's impossible to get parts for anything.
Right now. It's impossible to get anything right now. And so I've been to Royal King, been to Tractor Supply, been to all the auto parts stores and stuff, trying to find some inch and a half wide, 5/8 bolt, 8-inch long U-boats.
Odd ones.
Very, very odd U-boats. And some, you know, they come in like 5/16 and 7/16, which is not heavy duty enough for what the application I was needing them for. So I finally got online Monday, and let's go back and talk to this. I found some U-boats at an auto parts store. They were going to work. I got them home. They were three quarters of an inch too short. So I go to the hardware store and I grab some bolt extenders and stuff for all thread. And I was like, this will work. I go to Donnie's, have some plates made and everything. Had some stuff welded onto it. Went and got some 5/8 bolts. Put it together. Went to torque them down. Blew the threads off the U-boats.
Oh, no.
And stuff. So here I am, got everything together. I'm ready to heal and bed my garden. And I blew the threads off of the U-boats I had. And so and that was Monday. So Tuesday I get online. And I call this guy in New York and stuff. He says he can do an inch and three quarter. And I said, no, inch and a half is what I need. Inch and three quarter would be too big for what I'm trying to do. And he said, you'll never find them stuff. He said, that's an oddball size. Okay, cool. So I keep on searching and searching. And finally, this guy in somewhere in Pennsylvania and stuff, I call him. He says, yeah, they're common up around these parts.
Well, that was all machine country at one time. I mean,
and so
industrial
I was like,
state.
Cool. I was like, so I need an inch and a half wide, 5/8 thread, and 8 inches long. He goes, yeah, we got those. He said, well, we don't have them in stock. But he said, since you called in and stuff, he said, I'll make them, and I'll have them to you by the end of the week. And I'm like, cool.
All right.
So I got 8 U-boats, washers, and nuts. And he had these huge nuts on them and stuff because they're made for truck springs and stuff.
Right.
And truck axles. And so I got them on there, got everything. This thing needs some tweaking. And if you want to see what the healer better looks like, you can get on our Facebook page, Eastern Kentucky Homesteaders on Facebook, and look at it. I'll have pictures of the everything put together, and then I'll show you the picture of the garden.
Well, now, Lloyd, you said it's 50% together?
It is 50% together.
And you're using it and it works?
I'm using it. It works. What I'm going to
do... Well, it sounds like 100% together.
Well, it is for the first phase.
For you.
For me. And my uncle wants a plastic stretcher added onto it, which is not that big a deal. And so I'm going to add that onto it, you know, after I get done healing and bedding my garden, then I can add the plastic stretcher to
it. Yeah, you'll need one little roller or something you can't find.
Well, he has, he bought a used pontoon trailer. And, you know, they got the big rollers on it.
Yeah, yeah.
And he's going to turn that into a hay hauler, so he don't need the rollers. And I said, save me those rollers, because I can use those on the unroller.
Well, that'd be great.
And so he's got two or three of them already off and everything, and I'm going to add to it.
Well, they should have good bearings and all in them, you know.
Yeah, they should be really good. And it's not been used in years and everything, so it's been in a garage.
Yeah.
And so I'm going to take the rollers off that trailer, extend my frame out, put a plastic unroller on it, and then next year when I get a little bit of money built back up, I'll buy another set of horrors and put on it. And so you will be able to heal your ground, lay the plastic, and cover the ends of the plastic all at one time.
That'd be great.
And so I'm like, you can buy these things. The healer bedder by itself is anywhere from $500 to $900. Depends on the category hitch that you use. I'm using category 2 hitch and stuff. It's 55 horsepower tracker. The category 1 hitches and stuff for the little small 35 horsepower tracker and stuff, you can get those, but I was afraid I would break it and stuff with the 55 horse. And so I've got that put together. It works for what I'm going to use it for. It will work and stuff, but over time I'll just keep on adding to it. And then we'll have, like I said, a healer bedder and a plastic stretcher, and then the horrors to cover the dirt, or take dirt and cover the ends of the plastic to keep it all taut and everything.
Okay, so, well, what color are you going to paint it?
Probably rust brown.
I bought an old antique Massey Ferguson tractor, and I repainted it, and I sent pictures to Lloyd of it, and he says, I don't know why you painted it, it's just going to get rusty again.
That's exactly
but right. It looks good now. As a matter of fact, I've got it parked in my yard where I just
was it a 235 or
no, it's a TO35.
It was
the only year they made this particular model in the United States, and it was the last year. They started making it in 1941 in Canada. And then in 1955, they moved it to Dearborn, Michigan, and they made it. And then they went from a TO35 to a 35.
Oh, okay.
Which was just a little bit different.
Oh, okay.
And, but this tractor, it sat in a barn for like 10 years, and it's a gasoline tractor. And the guy that got it for me, he put a battery in it, poured some gas in it, and he said it didn't turn over two or three times, and it started right up.
Oh, that's awesome.
It smokes a little bit. I ain't worried about that.
Them old Massey Fergusons are some of my favorite. They're a heavy tractor, and they can get the small jobs done. And that's what built the agriculture industry.
Well, it turned out the state highway started using these tractors. Uh-huh. As a matter of fact, this one, it come off I won't mention the mountain, but it had a lot of state highway parts on it, you know. And I was thinking, the boys from the state highway went back to get their tractor one day, and it was, there's some pieces missing off this our tractor. So I painted them all red. No, you know.
but he's got a really. I like the old gas tractors because they had torque and stuff. That's all them tractors were made
well,
for.
Well, it'll start in the winter too, because I've got that little 1600 diesel Ford. It actually belongs to my neighbor up there. And you know, after trying to use it for years in the garden and everything, I forgot what being on a real tractor was all about. You know, those little 1600 Fords are four-wheel drive. I mean, they're good about getting around.
Yeah, they're a good all-purpose utility tractor.
But they don't. When you put like the horrors on the hitch, it don't raise them that high. When you go into a turn out of the garden, you're cutting into your yard. This thing, it throws them up in there.
Oh yeah.
And then when you drop them, it buries them. You know, you can. It's a real tractor. Uh-huh. It's a farm tractor. So
it is. And I went and picked up a Massey 35 or 235 or something out of Salt Lick several years ago, and my uncle called me and said, hey, I just bought this tractor, but I need somebody to go get it. And I was like, okay, I'll go get it real quick. And it was up there at a used car lot, and I was like, I just got my trailer real quick and I'll take off and go get it. And let me tell you, that was a long trip home, because that was a heavy tractor.
Well, this little tractor here is heavy.
That stuff, it had the wheel weights and everything on it, and the front end weights and stuff. So I don't know what they used it for and stuff, but I mean, it had a lot of weight added to it.
Well, this has got the brush guard bumper on the front of it, and it looked like somebody had wrapped a chain around it one time, tried to pull something, they broke two of the bars out of it, and it was twisted. So I took it off and had to take the bars down to Parrish, and he put them on his press and straightened them out, and I welded them. But I took that whole bumper thing off there, and I said, well, you know, this thing probably 50 pounds or something like that. It was all I could do to pick it up. So it don't need a front end weight on this thing.
Them old tractor stuff, I mean, they're...
Well, they're made out of good American metal, you know, iron and steel, you know.
And they're just pure, good tractors. Yeah. You know, I've always been a John Deere fan. I always will be a John Deere fan and stuff. But those tractors there, they were good tractors.
Well, now this one is the first year also that Massey and Ferguson put their joint names on it.
Oh, really?
And there's one place on the tractor I found, it says Massey with an H and then Ferguson.
Oh, okay.
Because Massey pulled with Harrison. They had Massey-Harrison tractors, Harris tractors. So, but now, you know, the first tractor I ever pulled with when I was young was an old John Deere, an old two-cylinder John Deere. And it was the first year they put a starter on them.
Uh-huh.
Before that, you had to turn flywheel start, but it started on gasoline. You run it on kerosene.
Yeah,
it was a little Poppin' John kind of outfit. It was a strong tractor.
Wahoo Shepherd. I've talked to you about Wahoo Shepherd. He's a really smart guy. Lives over on. Levin, as you go back towards Mount Sterling there, and he had an engine that would run off wood gas and stuff. A sawmill that ran off wood gas, and that's really cool, especially. Have you seen gas prices up there lately?
I just paid $4.29 in Irving for
gas. Yeah. And so I went and got gas for my truck and my lawnmowers yesterday, paid $144.
Well, I just filled my Ford up and got a 5-gallon can of diesel for the Kubota mower.
Uh-huh.
It was $86, and the Ford truck wasn't even empty.
And so... I always loved the wood gas motor, or the wood gas. It's just a standard motor and stuff, but you make your own wood gas using parts and everything, and you can introduce it to your gas burning motor, and it will work.
Well, will it work on these modern motors, or does it have to be an older?
I would think it would work on these modern motors, maybe with a little bit of,
because they're finicky, you know.
Yeah, back in World War II, the U.S. government put out a bunch of publications about turning vehicles and tractors over to wood gas because they was having a gas shortage back in the day. And so they put these publications out through the federal government stuff for you to change over to wood gas. And so I've been reading more and more into that. I've always been enthused about other burning materials other than fuel anyway. But... that's just, you know, something I was just going to bring up.
Well, at the gas station today, there was an older fellow about my age, old, was standing there, you know, getting gas, and we got talking about the gas prices, and he remembered today, and I was telling him, I said, 1970, I was out in Tucson, Arizona, and I had a 1948 Studebaker Champion, and it was about out of gas, so I pulled into a gas station, and I had a $5 bill. I filled the gas tank up and came out with change. And here I'm paying $4.29 for 1 gallon. He said, yeah, I remember them days.
that was some time ago there, Paul.
I still had to work pretty hard to get that $5 back then. So it.
With the gardening and stuff, though, I have not put my garden out. I've been waiting for this healer bedder to be finished. So
I could eat onions right now if I wanted to.
And I did not get to seed this year and stuff, so we're going to buy some of our plants at the greenhouse. But Teresa did order our wildflower. She ordered a pound of wildflower seed from a American Meadows company. Mm-hmm. And so it will be spreading more wildflowers out around the garden this year. For the pollinators and stuff. That was really cool to see with the bees and the butterflies last year.
Well, now I'm growing a lot of mammoth sunflowers this year because I like to feed my birds in the winter. A year ago, you could buy a 20-pound bag of sunflower seeds for $8, $9.
Uh-huh.
And now a 10-pound bag is like $20.
Really?
To feed the birds. So I've got my garden's 85 feet long, and I've got 3 rows of sunflowers. The mammoth ones out there.
Year we grew the mammoth ones, and I saved 10 gallons of seed off of them by harvesting them and everything. So we'll put some sunflowers back out this year, and then we're putting the wildflowers out for the pollinators. But I'm going to put a border on three sides of my garden of wildflowers to draw the bees and stuff back in, and then my garden will be inside of the wildflowers. And then also, me and Teresa was talking about this last week, that we're going to scale our garden back to a third of what it normally is, maybe 25% of what it normally is, because we usually grow all this stuff and just give it away and stuff. But we haven't used any of our tomato sauce this year yet, and we haven't used any of our tomato juice this year. I've got a whole freezer full of corn. I got corn coming out of my ears and everything. And me and Paul was talking about this before the show. I used to love peaches and cream corn. Great stuff. Awesome. But when you read into it, corn is a filler. It's all. It has no nutritional value to the human body.
Well, a cow will argue with you about that.
And so humans cannot digest corn and stuff, especially whole kernel corn. And so the more I got to reading into it and stuff, I'm like, well, why am I eating it for and stuff?
It tastes good.
only reason it tastes good because it had sugar and butter on it.
Yeah.
And so I was like, well, I don't need the butter in my life. Definitely don't need the sugar. And so I ate corn maybe once a year now.
Yeah.
And
well, I don't even eat cornmeal anymore.
Really?
Yeah. I just lost a taste for it somehow, you know. Things change, you know.
Yeah, yeah. And stuff. Yes. But the chicken deal and stuff, everybody, Wayne from Over Camargo and stuff, he's telling, hey, you need to put cat food in your chicken feed and stuff, and they'll start, you know, eating it, and you'll start getting eggs again. So I go to the store, I get cat food. I have to pull out my old cornmeal grinder, and I ground it down and stuff to make it fine and put it in with the regular chicken feed and everything. And they'll eat the chicken feed, but not the cat food.
You get up in the morning, go out there and find 20 cats out in your chicken yard.
But so that didn't work for me and stuff, because I
can't. Well, you tried it, you know.
I tried it. And then James from Over Camargo and stuff, he goes, you need to put a head of lettuce in there and put a rooster in there. And I'm like, okay. So I got a buddy of mine that said, you know, I've had two different people say you need to put a rooster in there. And so he's like, I could loan you one stuff. And I was like, no, I got a buddy of mine. He said he'd let me have a rooster and everything. He's got several of them. So I was going to put a rooster. I have not got the rooster into them yet. But I do the lettuce because, you know, we have fruit and stuff that goes bad at the store all the time. And so I'll feed that to the chickens from time to time. And so I threw a head of lettuce in there on Sunday or Monday. And it's about half gone, and it's in a shady spot, so it's not wilting real bad. And so, and they're still not laying eggs yet. So I'm going to try the rooster thing. But Teresa says, "Hey, let's just move them to the backyard at the house and everything." I'm like, "Okay, we got John gave me a bunch of hostas, so we planted hostas in the backyard." And they're doing really good and stuff. He had a bunch of them growing around the barn and stuff, and they were blocking the airflow to the bottom of the barn, so he dug them up and gave them to me. And so now you can get airflow back into the barn. And I put them on the back of the house. They're doing wonderful. I split them up. He gave me this big old, it's about the half size of a banana box.
Well,
and I split it up into eight pieces and put them out along the, there's a place under our eaves or our house that on the back of the house, our house faces north-south, so the north side of the house does not get a whole lot of sun under the eaves, hardly any, only except in the afternoons. And so there was a barren spot of just dirt, just growing, or just not growing up. But so I put the hostas in there, and they love it because it's in the shade 99% of the day.
Right.
And then I went and got this Spanish moss, and I put a clump of Spanish moss and then a hosta plant, a Spanish moss and a hosta plant. And they are filling that space in, making it green, loving that lush soil.
Well, you're talking about planting moss. One of my bottom fields where I used to grow tobacco in it.
Uh-huh.
And I don't have tobacco anymore, but I'd let trees start coming up in it. They're getting some pretty nice sized poplars and sycamores, but they've shaded that field so much, I mow it. Mm-hmm. But instead of grass down there now, I'm getting moss.
Yeah.
The whole field's just covered with moss, but it's great to walk on in the evenings. Mm-hmm. I walk down through there.
You can take moss. I took a UK agriculture class 5 years ago.
Yeah, you get clumps of it and just put it somewhere.
And you take moss, you scrape it up off the ground, make sure it's, you know, inch thick or something like that. And then you take you and spread it out over a picnic table, throw you some dirt on top of it, and then take that moss and cover around that ball of dirt, and then tie it off real good on the top with some hay string, and then you can put herbs and plants down in that, and then keep it wet. That moss will help maintain the moisture inside the soil, and then you can make hanging
moss got it's got a lot of nutritional value for
yes,
plants. It's got a lot of stuff in it.
It does. Moss contains a whole lot of nutritional value, and it keeps it constant as long as it stays wet.
Well, you see those hanging plants that are in moss baskets, mm-hmm. you know. I mean, that's what they're doing there.
And so there you go, Paul. There's an idea to use for all your moss that you're growing.
In between finishing the house and mowing grass and tending the garden.
Did you get all your brick laid on your chimney?
No. I'm back to working now. I got to get this little job finished. So I got the bricks up on the scaffolding.
Uh-huh.
That was the hardest part. Yeah, but I haven't got the mud up there yet, and then I haven't got me up there yet.
Well, you started on this like a month ago.
No, I started on this like 15 years ago. You know, I always said I was going to finish my house before I turned 70. Well, I turned 70 back last fall.
Uh-huh.
House, well, it's 50%. No, it's better than that. But.
No, the only thing you like is a couple of brick, 200 brick or something
Yeah, I'm not liking much, you know, and then I've got a little chink in my house is finished. It's nothing.
Yeah.
A lady friend of mine I haven't seen in years, we text all the time. She's in Louisville, but she hasn't been around since I put the back wing on the house mm-hmm. with the inside toilet and everything. Yeah, I have inside plumbing. And so I was on the phone with her one day, and I told her my house wasn't finished yet. And she says, well, do you have a washing machine in there now? And I said, yes, I do. She said, oh, your house is finished. So the dryer's still outside, you know.
Yeah.
But one thing you was talking about, putting flowers out for pollinating,
uh-huh.
this is something I did. It's probably been 15 years ago. And I grew a bunch of tomatoes back then.
Uh-huh.
I couldn't get any tomatoes on them. The blooms were making blooms, and then they were falling off. We didn't have any bees that year.
Mm-hmm.
But I had one tomato plant that was growing there next to the porch, and it was getting tomatoes all over it. And I was going, well, what's going on here? And one morning I was looking at it, and there's little teeny ants that piss ants, you know, come in the house. Well, they were using that for a ladder to get up into the house.
Oh, really?
Well, they were going from bloom to bloom, you know, and they were carrying the pollen back and forth.
Oh, that's cool.
So one morning before I went to work, it was real damp out in the garden, I took a bag of sugar,
uh-huh.
and I went out to my tomato plants and broadcast sugar over top of all my tomato plants,
uh-huh.
and the ants went to them. I got tomatoes.
Really?
That's a little bit of sugar, you know, did it, you know?
Yeah, so the ants was
so
that
the ants
sugar?
Did the, right.
Yeah, so, and
but it worked, you know, and it
Now, you know, talking about pollinators like that, you know, you can buy pumps and stuff, hand pumps that you suck the pollen in from, mm-hmm. from one, and then you go over and you spray it on another, so you can do your cross-pollination.
Well, what's that chemical stuff that they have? You spray on there, it comes in an aerosol can. It's
I don't know.
The fruit's weird, though. I've had some of that. You get fruit that doesn't have seeds in it. I mean, it's...
Really?
Yeah, they have a name for that stuff, and I can't think of it now, but I used it once.
Yeah.
But it comes in an aerosol can, and my mind ain't there anymore, but I'll remember what it's called. So Lloyd and I were talking about something a minute ago, you know, and 2 seconds later, we both forgot what it was.
Yeah, we're sitting there looking.
What was that you just said? I said, I don't know. And he said, well, I don't know either.
It was testosterone, and we was talking about, they've done a new study just a couple of years ago, stuff that a 45-year-old man a couple of years ago did not have the testosterone levels of a 65-year-old man back to 20 years ago. Mm-hmm. And so there's not a lot of, you know, a lot of people kind of keep hush-hush and stuff if they got low testosterone and all this. But now it's becoming such a problem because of the food that we eat.
Kentucky Fried Chicken.
And everything. And the lack of exercise and the work ethics and everything has
Well, definitely the American diet has just gone to crap. I mean, we eat so much. Coming through town today, all these restaurants up here, you know, fast food restaurants are all cooking for a supper crowd, dinner crowd, you know. Yeah. And it smells horrible. Just the old greasy fried smell.
Yes, I can't do the fried foods.
Yeah.
But so the testosterone, they're saying that the U.S. Department of Agriculture and Food and stuff, in another 5-10 years stuff, we could really see a deficit of testosterone in men and stuff because of our diets.
Mm-hmm.
And so they're already, you know, they're trying to get people to quit using the fertilizer so much and to try to go back to as natural as they can right. on growing this stuff. And to help build the American diet back up. And so I still can't think of the word that you said earlier and stuff.
I can't either. Oh, it'll come to me about 3 o'clock this morning. I'll wake up and go, oh, that's what it is. And I'll have to call you and tell you.
So testosterone stuff. The American diet stuff has really gone downhill from what it was 20 years ago. And it's probably half of what it is 50 years ago.
Well, I had a cousin just stayed with me for a week, you know, and she's in her 60s. And she come to Kentucky looking for some land. You know, and I've still got a root cellar full of food. I've got a pantry full of food. I've got different kinds of meats, chicken, fish, you know, you name it, in my freezers. I could not get her to eat any of it. But she'd leave and go to town, get something from McDonald's and come back.
Really?
And then what she was eating, and this is just a diet. She's up here in Maryland, you know, and this is... She said, well, this is the way everybody eats. I said, no, it's not the way I eat. But
you know, one thing that this COVID pandemic did, it made Teresa a better cook and stuff because we didn't want to go, we still don't eat out in restaurants. We may eat out one a month or something. We go to, Lexington has a Sonny's Barbecue now, and it's over off Winchester Road. I love barbecue. And so... if we go to Lexington for some reason to get supplies or something or other, 3 o'clock in the afternoon when they're not horribly busy and stuff, we'll stop at Sonny's and grab some barbecue and stuff. I love pulled pork barbecue.
Yo,
that's my delicious. Absolute favorite food when it comes to barbecue and stuff. But we refuse to eat out in restaurants still.
Well, I just don't trust it, and I don't know what the people in the kitchen are doing, you know, mm-hmm. you just don't know. But I stayed on the road working for years, you know, and I went to other states, and living in motels, you know, and eating it, whatever greasy spoon I could find. I always tried to find an old country Ma and Pa restaurant, but they're not everywhere.
Yeah.
I put on excessive weight, you know, I was sluggish, you know, my whole digestion was a mess all the time, you know, I was always got gas and just horrible, you know. And when I came off the road, I decided I wasn't going back on the road to work anymore. I said, if I don't cook it, I'm not going to eat it.
Yeah. And that's a good way to be and stuff, because here in the last 3 weeks since it's been warming up and everything, I've already lost 18 pounds and stuff just because I've been eating lighter and not eating as much sugar, not drinking as much caffeinated drinks. Right. And I've turned over to my great Gatorade. That's my go-to choice to have at least 3 to 4 bottles of water a day. And 2 bottles of Gatorade.
Well, I'm into cranberry juice and a green tea every once in a while. But I don't even drink a whole green tea. I just take one with me and kind of sip on it a little bit. But I'm water. I've got a good spring and good water.
You got? I have drank that water and stuff.
Oh, it's delicious.
It tastes so good up there, and stuff comes out straight out of that
it's good water.
Hillside and everything. And so, you know, you're one of the lucky few that have that, you know.
Well, my neighbor, the lady that owns the property with me, her son has gotten licensed from the state of Kentucky to test water.
Uh-huh.
And the first places he came to was up in Narhala and went on up to mountains, what they call mountain springs, you know, and it's because there's springs just coming out everywhere. And he started at the head of that mountain and stopped at every spring and got a vial of water and went on down through us and went all the way to the Kentucky River.
Uh-huh.
Well, when the results came back from us on up to the head of the mountain springs, Holla was the purest drinking water in the state of Kentucky.
Really?
What it came back with.
Well, that's cool.
Mm-hmm.
So I know it has a really good
Well,
taste
I'll drink out of my creeks. I got 3 creeks on the farm, you know, where 2 come down and meet into the 3rd one.
Uh-huh.
And even if it's a little bit cloudy,
uh-huh.
you know, I'll drink that water and it does not bother me.
Uh-huh.
But like I was talking about my dog, you know, I mean, she's smart. She won't drink city water. If it comes out of a tap, she don't want anything to do with it.
You usually have to chew it a little bit.
Well, she'll go find a bucket that's, you know, been sitting around with some rainwater in it and slurp it up. But she will not. You pour some chlorinated water in the thing, she'll go, what's this?
Yeah. Yeah. And you know, cows are addicted to city water and stuff. If they can get city water, they will go to the source and stuff. There's a pipeline that's got a little small crack in it and stuff, and it leaks out onto the farm a little bit, and so you, there'll be a big hole there where the cows sitting there licking
wallered out,
wallered out, trying to get to that city water and everything. So
Well, my dog won't eat quick food either. Somebody tries to get her some sausage or scrambled egg from Hardee's or something like that.
Yeah,
she takes it over and buries it somewhere and walks back. And goes, okay, now what really do you have here? You know,
you know, that's funny stuff. And you know, so we don't eat it at the restaurants. And but Teresa's gotten really, her steak is by far better than any steakhouse you can go to and stuff. It is done just right. Has a small char to it. Usually we make the char gravy out of it and everything and stuff, with, you know, with the pork loins and stuff that we eat and everything. And so she's become a really good cook.
Well, cooking's not very difficult if you just pay attention. And I grew up in a semi-German family. My grandmother, Fry,
when I was little. You have a lot of kraut and wieners as a kid?
And Grandpa made his own kraut the way I do down in the cellar, you know. Uh-huh. And but Grandma, when I was little, she'd make me stand on a stool while she was fixing stuff. And like strudels and different things. She said, now stick your finger in and taste it. And she said, if it tastes good, the dough or whatever you mix it, she said, if it tastes good, she said, it's going to be good. Bake it.
Really?
Yeah.
So that's a good rule to live by. Here I am looking at my iPad on 11. It's got a big old chocolate pie with marine covering over here.
Yeah, let's not talk chocolate pie.
But, you know, since it's warmed up and stuff, I've started eating a lot healthier. I feel a lot better. I've started wearing shorts again. I wait until later in the year to put my shorts on and everything, but it got warm quick this year. We had a really cool spring, but after spring sprung and we're headed into summer now, it got warm quick. And so I elected to have the shorts already on and burnt my legs up yesterday mowing the yard. But where was I going with this? I forgot where I was going.
Well, we'd talk about diet and losing weight and
stuff. Oh, so I have to wear lace-up boots now and stuff with my shorts and stuff because, you know, just regular cowboy boots just don't look real good with
shorts.
Well,
it makes you look like what they call them people, nerds.
Yeah. And so with my lace-up boots, I don't have a stomach or that was nearly as big.
Yeah, you have lost weight, I can tell.
And, last time I seen you, Paul, I was getting out of my Jeep, and he said, buddy, if you gain another pound, you can't get out of your Jeep no more.
Well, you wouldn't be able to get in it.
And so,
yeah, you kind of hopped out today.
Yeah, I hopped out and stuff. I'm good to go. I'm 18 pounds less, and I'm going to keep on going with this and stuff, because after I seen what I was doing and stuff.
Well, when I first met you, Lloyd, you didn't have that gut on you.
No, either. And so, I'm going to quit down on the caffeinated beverages and everything. And then drink more, because it's summertime now, so you need more, definitely need more water and stuff. And I love great Gatorade.
Well, look at me, Lloyd. I'm 70 years old. I'm pretty tight. Hey, we ain't got a camera in here. I can lie if I want to.
And stuff. But, you know, just the growing of the gardens and stuff, you know, I'm going to try to stay on a good path this year and try to keep it going, because every winter I gain 20 pounds right off. Especially
That's easy to do. You know, the days are short. You know, and you sit up late and you snack and you just.
I don't know about sitting up late and stuff. I work late, but not sitting up late.
Yeah.
But around Christmas and stuff, you got the Thanksgiving and Christmas. Well, one thing you got Thanksgiving and Christmas, you got chocolate meringue pie
And then you got leftovers that last a week too.
Yeah, and all that good sugary stuff that you make in the kitchen.
Yeah,
and stuff. And I really went overboard with it this year. And now I had the effects of it and stuff. Now I've started dropping the pounds off, and I feel a lot.
Well, it's a matter of willpower. You just gotta tell yourself, you know, if I want to live a little bit longer and have some kind of quality of life, you know, I need to cut back on this stuff.
Yeah, And so you said your thyroid's been messed up for the last week or two and stuff.
Well, it's been messed up for the last 2 years, and they messed it up on me. They changed dosages and brands and didn't tell me, you know, and it's just all of a sudden I got weak, and now it doesn't want to get back where it belongs.
Really?
And they keep jumping. They go from one extreme dose to the other, you know, trying to get it back. I have what they call hypothyroidism, where I don't produce the thyroid, whatever they call the drug that your body produces, you know. So
the chemical.
That's tough. So I've been working on it on my own, and I'm finally starting to feel better. But it'll make you so tired all the time. Mm-hmm. You have no energy, and then your thinking process. Here a week ago, I went to cut a board. Simple little thing. Had to cut an angle on it.
Yeah.
I cut it six times. I finally put my tools back in the truck, and I went home.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that can't take to work.
You know, Teresa, she went and had some blood work drawn, I think it was this week or last week. It might have been last week. And she said, man, she would like to have to know why she's so tired all the time.
She might have thyroidism.
And stuff. Yeah. And thyroid problems run through her family pretty rampant. And so she finally went and had her blood work drawn and stuff. She said, you know, this would explain, you know, why I'm so tired all the time and everything. She works from home at least 40 to 50, maybe more hours a week than that. And then she takes care of Bubby 24/7.
Right.
And stuff. He's not in daycare or nothing like that. So she takes care of him 24/7, works at least 8 to 10 hours a day from home, and hardly ever leaves the house. And so she's drained because her job is IT staffing solutions and stuff. She's a human resources manager for 100 and some consultants, you know, nationwide. And so they're always, you know, emailing her and calling her stuff and trying to find benefits and all this. And so that's, you know, it's a hard job on the mind to keep up with all that. And then you got Bubby there who she takes care of him and stuff every time, you know, he dirties a diaper or something like that, needs, you know, a meal and stuff. She has to be right there for his beck and call and stuff. And she's an awesome mom. But she is, you know, feeling tired all the time. And so she's like, hey, maybe this, you know, my thyroid might be messing up a little bit.
Well, is it? I mean, did they tell her?
And so she went and had this blood work done, come back. Her thyroid is perfect.
Well.
And stuff. And so we're going to go, you know, try to figure out why she stays tired all the time.
Well, just wearing herself out.
Yeah, just wearing herself out from the work.
Well, it could be something in her diet, too. She's not consuming too much sugar, is she?
No, she likes the more natural salads and everything.
Well, you know, I've been doing some studying on the thyroidism. And now I've got, like I said, hypo. There's hypo and hyper. Hyper, you produce too much of the chemical and you're wound up all the time. And generally, a little skinny person. But the hypo, you're not producing enough, and it's most generally women that have hypo. Men get it, which is what I've got, because we inherit it from our mothers.
Really?
Thanks, Mom. And she wasn't something for me to remember her by, but it controls so many. Your thyroid gland controls millions of cells in your body, and a lot of them in your brain. And it controls the centers in your brain that control everything else in your body.
Yeah.
So when it starts going off, you know, your liver starts going off, your kidneys start going off, you know, your pancreas, and it's everything, you know.
Your thyroid is your regulator of the body.
Right. Well, it's the brain that runs the brain, you know.
Yeah. And so you got to keep your thyroid in check to keep everything else in
check. Well, when mine goes out of whack, I get real moody. You know, my thoughts aren't clear, you know. I can't remember anything. I mean, it's just
You got two strikes against you, stuff. You're old and your thyroid's messed up. So you really can't remember.
Well, I you know, we all need excuses.
But talking about our next story stuff here, a shift from farming made our ancestors shorter. So me and Paul was talking about this. I was telling him what I was going to go over before the show started. And so back in the days when we had to be hunter-gatherers, we hunted our food. We gathered our herbs and stuff from what was around us and everything. And then we started making that shift to becoming farmers. And as we became making that shift to becoming farmers and stuff, people started growing shorter and stuff, so they didn't have to be as tall.
Well, they didn't have to run and stretch and reach, you know, like runners. You know, you had to run to catch stuff. You know?
And so then they started becoming shorter, and then they also started becoming skinnier. Because hunter-gatherers, you know, they were very physical fit.
Well, they didn't have the meat protein.
And stuff, but the farmers didn't have the meat protein and stuff. You know, cows didn't come on until later time and stuff to have, you know, your meat intake. And so...
With all the fats that are in that meat and mm-hmm. all that.
And so the port, you know, the pigs wasn't, you know, most farmers had one or two pigs and that was it. And that lasted, mm-hmm. you know, all year long. And but you know the pigs today and the pigs of yesteryear are two different pigs, and that's what this article is talking about. Was when so when we made this shift to go to farming, all of a sudden people started growing shorter and thinner. And then this article also got into talking about how you know, on the lean years when the tomatoes didn't produce real good and the wheat didn't produce real good, you know, famine started kicking in and everything because you didn't have enough to eat, and so that made people even skinnier and stuff. And then, you know, so it was a very fascinating article to read about how, you know, how you had these like titan people walking around, you know, catching deer and all these wild animals and eating them and foraging and stuff, and everything was a lot more healthier for you back in that time. And then you start turning to farming. Well, when you go to farming, you need fertilizers and everything. So, and then that way you start, you know, finally kicking down to where we are today, where you got a lot of fast food. Nobody's eating correctly. You got obese people. You got obesity is a problem and stuff, in especially in the U.S. and stuff, because our sizes of our food have to be more to serve our palate.
Right. Well, people aren't active anymore. There's nothing for them to do, you know.
Yeah.
People live in very small areas, you know, where mowing the grass is, you know, a yard that's 60 foot by 60 foot, you know. Yeah. I mean, how much exercise are they getting?
And if you want anything, you just get online. You press one button, you press another button to pay for it, and it's in your doorstep 2 days later
mm-hmm.
and stuff. And, you know, so we've come from the hunter-gatherers, which were big, mighty, strong people and stuff, down to where we are today and stuff of the computer age and the info and technology and stuff, to where, you know, they're going back. And, you know, this all ties together as to with testosterone problems and thyroid problems and, you know, all this stuff is starting to really... They're saying, what's going on? Well, it's the food.
Well, the thyroid medicine I take is called Armor. It's an animal product, a byproduct. And it offers more elements to feed the thyroid than any of the pharmaceuticals do.
Really?
Yeah. I was talking to my doctor about it. She said, well, you have to have a T2, T3, and T4, you know, in there. And, you know, the pharmaceuticals only have the T4. Well, I was looking up the literature on the Armor that I take, uh-huh. which has been around since the Chinese used it 1,000 years yeah. ago. It's got all of them in it.
Uh-huh.
So, you know, when it's when my dosage gets correct, you know, I'm getting everything my thyroid needs from that. But it's an animal product. It's from beef and pig parts, glands and stuff.
Uh-huh.
In the early days in the settlements here in the United States, if they had children they knew had a thyroid problem, they would cut those glands out of the animal and make sandwiches out of it and feed their kids
really?
Gland sandwiches
and broth soup.
Yes, and soups. Yes, and the get their thyroid working.
Mm-hmm. And so that's just really cool, you know, how we can sit here and talk about all this stuff, and it all plays a part in the whole picture here and everything. We got a nap.
I don't know, he's been after me since I, and I did bathe, I mean.
But my other article here stuff is Red Hair and Appalachia. So I'll just read you this thing here real quick. It was... Paul said he used
now
to
be redheads. Be careful what you say about redheads now.
So he used to be redhead at one time. He's bald and going white now. So, but red hair and the least common natural occurring hair color, with only about 2% of the population possessing the flaming locks of auburn hair. But did you know that this tiny pocket in Appalachia holds the highest population of redheads in all of North America? Here are some facts about the red hair in Appalachia. West Virginia is deemed number one redhead-friendly state due to its lack of sunshine, and their enthusiasm towards famous redheads and redhead causes. Kentucky is deemed number two most redhead-friendly state and home to the alcoholic beverage known as the Kentucky Redhead. The high level of red hair in Appalachia is likely due to a large number of early Scottish and Irish immigrants to the area. Appalachian native Dolly Parton has a famous song about the redhead. Everyone ever heard of Jolene? In 2010, Ohio held the largest gathering of redheads in North America with over 2,500 attendees. Appalachia holds the highest number of men with red facial hair, but a differing overall haircut. That's me. I have brown and black facial hair, but I also have red that comes in too.
Man.
The Appalachian Trail attracts more redheads than any other 11 U.S. National Scenic Trails.
Wow.
And there was a serial killer in the 80s and 90s through Kentucky, Tennessee, West Virginia, and states who he only targeted redheads. These were known as the Redhead Murderers.
Well, he hated them, didn't he?
Evidently, he did. What? And stuff. So, Appalachia, it has the westernmost part of West Virginia, the easternmost part of Kentucky, the easternmost part of Tennessee, the westernmost part of North Carolina, and then Georgia and South Carolina are the redhead capital of the U.S.
Well, now, I grew up, you know, in the western part of Pennsylvania, and there was quite a few redheads up there, but they were all Scotch-Irish. Mm-hmm. I got a wee bit of Irish in me, too. So. You know.
And, Pennsylvania is part of the west of the Appalachian right. Mountains and stuff, so... all the Scottish Irish that came over.
Well, there's been so many stories about, you know, even Conan Doyle, you know, in his Sherlock Holmes stories, had the Redheaded League, uh-huh. you know, had the story about it. And it was, but there's another thing about redheads, too. There's not many of them. Redheaded women with green eyes are very right. extremely rare. And they have that weird pH blood thing, too. And at one time, I think it was in Iran, northern part of Iran, that country was covered with redheaded women with green eyes.
Huh. Well, that's cool. I never heard of that one.
Yeah, well, I read that in an article.
Huh.
And you think about them people being sort of Arabic and all that, and then there's all these fair-skinned, red-headed women with bright green eyes.
Yeah.
But they're a rarity.
Yeah.
You know, red-headed people have blue eyes.
Yeah.
But not green.
Teresa watches this show. I couldn't tell you what channel it comes on. It's called Outlander or something like that. And it talks about the people coming over from England and Ireland and Scotland and stuff. And the last names are like Mackenzie and stuff like that. And if you look through Kentucky history over on the, you know, easternmost part of the state and everything, you can start to see, you know, all these last name Irish and Scottish last names and stuff that are still prevalent today. And everything, and so I've done some, you know, genealogy checking on that and stuff. And there was a lot of the Irish, even our music, even the bluegrass music that comes out of the eastern Kentucky and stuff, or has parts of the Irish Scottish music from you know the old lands and stuff like that. So they brought that across the ocean with them, brought it here and stuff. And it's made its way, a lot of it's made its way into like bluegrass.
Well,
music.
Now the Scottish brought a lot of stuff into this country. You know, you take these, what they call the slave walls, these rock
uh-huh.
walls.
Yeah.
They were built by black labor, slave labor, but they were engineered by Scots stonemasons.
The first ones here in Kentucky, even around Paris and stuff, were made by the Scottish Irish immigrants. And then it went to the Chinese immigrants. And then. What everybody thinks it is and stuff, but it was started by the Scottish Irish
right.
and stuff. A lot of these horse farms and stuff that had
well, they were stone maidens, you know, because that's all they had in their country was rocks, you know.
Yeah, and so they brought that, you know, that technology over with them and everything, and made these beautiful walls out of rock that, you know, it was just field stone that was laying out in the fields
mm-hmm.
and caused plows, you know, all kinds of.
Well, they had to pick it up and use it, you know.
And so they used it into the walls and everything. So.
Well, the Scots also brought distilling into this country.
Uh-huh.
They were the first makers of moonshine stills.
Yeah. And, you know, if you go back into, like, Powell County history and Lee County, Owsley County and stuff, into the moonshine whiskey making and stuff, there were several distilleries around here that's, you know, it's long gone from now. and stuff. But to go back and look at that, that's really they used to be one. Used to be a distillery up on Little, or not Little Creek, but Hardin's Creek, over here on Powhatan, which is 1057. On the, you come down Furnace Mountain on the 1057 side,
mm-hmm.
and it was down about 5-6 miles on the left hand side and stuff, tucked back into the woods and stuff. I don't remember the family that used to have it and stuff, but that's how they got their start, was in, you know, distillery back in those days and everything.
Well, you know,
and that all started, you know, this, it all ties into each other, the Irish.
Well, when the Romans were conquering all through Europe, you know, back whenever it was, you know, 5th century or whatever, you know, they didn't distill their wine, you know, they just drank wine.
Yeah.
But when they got up as far as Scotland, they couldn't conquer Scotland. They got up there, and those people were crazy, you know, and they just turned around and came back. But they discovered distilling there, and they took that back to Italy with them,
mm-hmm.
and then they started making brandies and stuff out of their wine. But until then, they didn't distill. But when they made it as far as Scotland, you know, they said, "Well, what are these apparat?" You know, and then of course the Scotch were making Scotch whiskey, you know, rye and barley whiskey, and
so they just brought it to Kentucky, and that's how we got our moonshine. So, you know,
well, whiskey's a big thing in Kentucky. You know?
Or bourbon. And stuff. It has to, if to be bourbon, it has to have limestone water in it.
Well, it has to be in a barrel for 1 year and 1 day.
1 year and 1 day, and be made out of limestone water.
Well, you know how it got its name, bourbon, don't you?
What's that?
Bourbon whiskey. Back in the day, anything that got shipped anywhere in this country, they put it in an oak, white oak barrel that had been charred on the inside, and the char kept bacteria and, you know, insects from in it. I mean, if they were going to send leather or anything, would got put in a charred barrel. So in Bourbon County, they were making whiskey, and they were sending it down to New Orleans. Well, they just stuck it in a charred barrel.
Yeah.
Okay, it took a year to get all the way down there. And when it got down there, you know, it was red whiskey. And it was delicious, you know, and these people down there said, well, we've got to get some more of that bourbon.
Oh, that's cool.
Yes, and that's just how it got its name. Yeah. You know, it came from Bourbon County. Well, we've got to get some more of that bourbon.
Well, that's pretty cool. I never read that far into it.
Yeah, and it's a true story.
And stuff,
it takes a year and a day, and I presume it took a year, a little over a year, for the whiskey to get all the way down there. Well, none of the rivers were locked up, you know. Everything was still rapid, you know, and it had to be carried. And then, you know, it'd be in mule trains and then on boats and then, you know, half of it got drank before they got it there.
And so that's pretty interesting. But let's see. There's something else I was going to talk about today. I had it on a bullet point. I do this like every sixth show or something or other. I'll have all these ideas written down and stuff. And I'm like, I need to talk about that, and I need to talk about that. And time I get here and stuff, I've already
Well, the got. Couple times I've been here, and today wasn't one of them. You know, I always wrote down things I wanted to think about, you know, but...
Has Maria got any headway on her classes?
Well, see, I don't know. Her phone's been tore up.
And that's right. You said
but she... Now, the last time I talked to her, yes, some stuff was happening, but she had several women that wanted to get involved in the herbal thing.
Okay.
You know, so I don't know. I think she's staying up there on her place, because I haven't seen her down on her river house down there on Bettyville Road, where she has her glass garden, it's called. It's she does stained glass work.
Uh-huh.
But I hope it comes together for her. She hasn't been in communication here lately, but if she doesn't have a phone, then she...
Yeah, it makes it a little harder for you.
Yeah.
Alrighty, folks. Well, we've come to the end of this show. I hope everybody's enjoyed this. I like these shows where, you know, we can tie a lot of this stuff together. And
well, Lloyd, you and I sit around. We sit around and talk about this kind of stuff when we're together anyway.
Yeah,
And the only difference here now is we got microphones in front of us. So.
Yeah. And, you know, people come in here, and they're scared to death to talk and everything, and all it is two friends going back and forth and everything.
Yeah, well, I don't have mic freedom, you know.
And thank you for coming on, being with us this week and everything.
Well, that's cool. Thank you.
My mother, she had knee surgery today, 2 weeks ago, when we recorded this, and she's doing awesome. Her physical therapy is going really good. She's almost off the walker and walking with a cane. She is doing really awesome job with she's going next week to get the staples taken out of it. It was a total knee replacement on her right leg, and she's needed this for years. And so it's been a little bit of a time for me to get over here and record shows and everything, But I got a hold of Paul. He said he'd be willing to come over and help me out. So we come over and did a show. But Mom's doing awesome. Teresa's doing awesome. Bubby's doing. Everybody's doing awesome and stuff. It's summertime now, but they said we could get some frost in here next weekend.
Really? Sure enough.
Yeah, and stuff. I think it's a lie. I think it was like an April Fool's joke, but they said it could get.
Well, I saw some pears on my pear tree, and I didn't have any last year, so maybe I got a pear or two. And the apple trees are doing good this year.
Yeah, the apple trees are doing real good this year. Yeah. And so, but just everybody have a blessed and wonderful weekend, and a blessed and wonderful work week ahead. Paul, you got anything else to add?
Nah, I can't think of much of anything. I've got a rough floor to put down tomorrow, and I'm going to have to take one of the windows back out of that building to get the lumber up there. I want to call it Fort Bryant, and he said, I don't want to put that name on there, you know. It's a little tiny log building that I built a cantilevered, just old rough boards on top. You know, and out over the front, it looks like you'd see something down at Fort Boonesboro.
Yeah, it's just really cool.
This is what I do, you know, and it looks really cool. But it's got just a ladder that goes into the upstairs. He's building this for his grandkids to play in.
Uh-huh.
And I wish I was a kid, you know, because it'd be perfect. Mm-hmm. But now I've got to get 10-foot-long lumber up there, and it's not going to go up that hole.
No, it's not.
So I'm going to have to take one of the windows out and get up on a ladder and shove it all through the upstairs window, and it's going to be interesting.
Paul is an excellent old-style log cabin, log house builder and everything, and so he's working on this place over on Harper's Ridge Road to Mount Sterling right now, and the house is three times bigger than it started out being and stuff, but this little playhouse that he's working on now.
I'd rather have the playhouse than the big house.
Yeah, it's pretty.
Well, he's got the porches on the big house now, and it doesn't look so massive anymore.
Oh, okay,
the porches
cool.
Have kind of broke it, you know.
Yeah, and stuff. That roof line and stuff.
Oh, it's 12 pitch roof. You know, it's straight up and down.
And stuff. It would be a nice house when they get done. But
I don't know what he's gonna do it.
Working on it for 3 years now, so
yeah.
But everybody have a wonderful week and stuff. We'll see you here next time. So long.
Bye, guys.
Love what I do till the day I'm dead.